Welcome to People More Interesting Than Me, the podcast, where I step back and let fascinating individuals take the spotlight. Join me as I sit down with incredible guests who captivate and inspire, showcasing their stories, experiences, and wisdom that make them truly extraordinary. Tune in for engaging conversations that'll leave you enlightened and entertained. I mean, at least I'm entertained. This week, we have Zach Hutchinson, an esteemed injury lawyer with a wealth of experience in advocating for those who have become wrongfully injured. He tells me some stories about working as a Geico lawyer, handling more than 100 cases at a time. And we discuss the future of law with self-driving cars and AI coming more into the picture. Enjoy. Can you, I guess, cue people in what you do and how you got to that point?
Yeah, so I'm a licensed Virginia attorney with a specialty in personal injury or civil litigation. Kind of getting into this, it's kind of a long story, but I think this type of work kind of chose me as opposed to me proactively seeking it out. I'm sure we'll get into that, but it was kind of backing into it, I think, is probably the best way I could describe it.
Okay. And when I think about that, you think about like the cult classics. I don't know, like obviously the hot McDonald's coffee, which which I did research on it before this, and the burglars, I'm using quotation marks, that fell from the skylight of someone's house. So correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you might know it, you might not know it, but like with McDonald's coffee, supposedly like they leave a, like when you hear the story, it's left out of like all the details. And this is probably like what you deal with a lot. Like people hear the big details, or it's passed on so many times that like the story is lost. Just like with McDonald's, like supposedly I heard that the lady who like the biggest person who brought the case on, like when she spilled coffee on herself, she had like serious third degree burns, like parts of her body got fused together. It was that hot, it's like 160 degrees, and she had asked McDonald's like to pay for her medical bills. Like she wasn't even trying to sue. And it's funny that that gets blown out of proportion. And then the other story was actually children who fell from, I think, a skylight of a school that they were like walking on the thing. It's just funny how those type of stories, I don't know.
Well, I think what you fall victim to, you know, is everybody, gets captured by the headline of, what dollar amount, these people are able to recover. And
exactly.
Say, oh, wow, I can't believe it ended up at that. And, the rest of it is kind of a game of telephone, like you said. It's, and I deal with that all the time, too. That's actually a really good point. When I talk to somebody, in my day to day, and we're talking about a case and what it's worth, inevitably I get down to it and I give them, my thoughts based on, if we took it to a trial here, in Virginia, what are we likely to get? And, they always want to reference some vague case that, their best friend's girlfriend, had, and, she only had, minor bruising after an accident. And, the insurance company was just showering her with money. And I'm just like, it's so hard to compete with those. The McDonald's coffee one, I haven't heard that in a while. And I had not heard about the skylight or the, falling from the light one. That's news to me. How long ago was that?
That would have to be like when I was still in high school. But the way the lore goes is it was supposedly burglars, but there were actually students. The burglar fell through the skylight and was suing the house owner because of the skylight, but he was the one burglarizing, which that's why I think it passed on so much that it was somebody was able to sue for that. And I think that's the extent of why these stories, I think, pass on like so much. One question I have for you, and I think it's I mean, you hear all the ones today, Facebook and like Red Bull and all these companies who get sued for like the big numbers you were talking about. And I don't want, and I definitely want to go back to that because I have a perfect thing that it reminds me of, but like 23 million, 28 million. But the thing is, like, most of these people are like, when they actually get like lose the trial, I don't know, like 2 million people get a $5 check sent in the mail like 2 years later. It's just funny how, like, the impact. It's kind of like reverse kickstarts. It's like, oh, we messed up. Here's $5 back instead of like $5 going to something positive, it's going to something negative.
Yeah, no, this it seems like there's usually a letdown with those. And I actually, had something come up personally. I was scrolling through Instagram a few weekends ago, and I'm a big Major League Baseball fan, and I typically will buy the package every year to watch all the baseball games. And apparently MLB is caught up in some sort of class action suit about sharing data with Facebook without the user's consent. And so anyway, I'm scrolling through Instagram on a Saturday morning, and I see an ad, you may be entitled to compensation for this. So in the line of work, I'm curious. So I click through, and I make it about 95% of the way through signing up with this firm. And then I go online just out of curiosity. I go to Google and I say, I plug it in and just kind of see what other people are saying. And yeah, along those lines, like people are getting, payments as little as, $5 to $10. And then they've got to pay this law firm 45% of that too. So it's just even more of a letdown. So anyway, I stopped and moved on to something else when I saw that. I'm like, this isn't even, worth my time.
Yeah, I just think that's crazy nowadays. And the fact that there's also a cap, obviously there's a cap on that because you're not going to get like, and I don't mean that from like the person getting the $5. I mean the company, when it's not sentenced, but what's the correct term for that when they,
Yes, it would be a verdict or an award,
yeah,
something
so
along
the
those lines.
verdict is 25 million after they've reached their 25 million, obviously of their $5 giving out to people, it's over, and it just seems, just like you were talking about before, underwhelming. But what I wanted to compare what you were talking to before, you have you seen Pawn Stars, the history channel show?
Not too much, but I think I went to, if this is the same thing, I actually on a family trip to Tennessee. I think they have a location in Nashville. I think I may have actually been in one of their, like a physical location, but no, I have not seen a whole lot of that show.
Well, I mean, it's the same premise. I mean, I don't frequent pawn shops, but it's like exactly what you were saying. They bring in like a Rolex, they bring in this old painting or this Super Bowl ring, and they're like, "Oh, this one can get $40,000," and like my friend Jimmy got it, so you're gonna give me $40,000, right? At least. And that's what I was thinking, exactly the way you were explaining, like people coming in and comparing stuff they had heard or like.
It's exactly like that. And you develop a way of kind of responding to that, over the years. And I've heard kind of almost everything at this point. And I just politely tell them, like, hey, that's all well and good, good for, like I said, your, friend's girlfriend for getting all that money for, just minor bruising. But no two cases are alike. Here's what we're working with on your case. And just always try to circle them back. And usually they see the light. I don't know if they're trying to, play games with me as a way to, motivate me more. But I always find that curious, when we go down that line of discussion with somebody.
And obviously, I would assume you kind of get to pick your cases. It's not like, obviously you have people come in, but there's only so many cases you can handle. Do you have kind of a, I wouldn't say restrictions, but requirements or things that you usually look for if you want to proceed with a case,
Yeah,
with a client?
always. Yeah, of course. So, currently what I do, I'm representing the injured folks, in these cases. I've done about half my time in practice was spent defending the cases. So like I've worked as an in-house attorney for, you know, large insurance companies, private law firms, stuff like that. But in those situations where you're defending these lawsuits, obviously you can't really pick your client. I just had that conversation earlier today where I'm remembering the insurance company that hired me right out of law school was Geico. And you know, you just get assigned those cases and you just got to play the hand that you're dealt. So, you know, you get some wild cards in those situations. You know, you kind of sit down and look at a file and you're like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with this one. But in the line of work that I do now, we can be more selective. So, you know, criteria wise, you know, we're always looking for, you know, if there's any red flag about maybe the person who's claiming the injury bearing some responsibility for it or fault or liability. You know, we try to screen those out, you know, for two reasons. We don't want to, you know, take on that case if there's really no realistic chance of making any sort of recovery. And the way we get paid, it's a contingency fee. So we, you know, kind of have a stake in the outcome as well. We don't want to sink a lot of time or manpower into something without any return. So we try to screen cases on that. You know, as far as the injury is concerned, there's not a whole lot we look at. I mean, I guess if somebody called us and, you know, said I was in an accident, here's what happened, they're not at fault, but they're telling us pretty clearly they weren't hurt, you know, we would tell them, well, that's a good thing, you know, one, but you know, the flip side is we can't really do much for you. You know, sorry that you're having to deal with the inconvenience, but you know, best of luck. So yeah, the criteria is pretty low. It's a low bar, I would say. You know, we do sign up quite a bit of cases, but we do try to be selective at the same time.
No, that's good. If you could talk, because you mentioned in Geico, that kind of fascinates me. That feels like, what does that seem like to me? That's like when you watch, you know, like those Law and Order, like Suits type deal. That's like you were working in the trenches, like taking, like, you know, like the hard stuff, the hard jobs to really understand. I can't even imagine what you had to deal because there's such a like a large and small spectrum, right? I mean, like, what was that like with Geico? Because I can't even imagine. Like, you had like 20 cases.
Oh gosh, no. So like at the peak of it, you know, our geographically, the office that I was hired by was located in Norfolk, Virginia. So it's right at the heart of Hampton Roads. And you know, we serviced areas like as far west as Richmond, you know, all the way eastward pretty much, you know, covering the peninsula and south side down here. And we would see, I think at my peak, my caseload was anywhere between 100 to like 125 cases at any given point.
Isn't
So,
that crazy though?
oh yeah, no, but you know, that it's even crazier though. And you know, fast forwarding beyond that, you know, the firm I'm at now, I think we do a better job of managing caseload here. But before I came to this firm, I was working for another one that was very much a mill and would sign up a ton of cases, whether they were really good or not. And I think when I left there, I had 170 cases in suit. So I mean, those are active cases on a court docket, 170 approximately when I left there. That was, when I look back on that now, it just is a blur. You can't do a good job for each one of those folks when you have that many cases that you're working. So I'm so happy to not be in that situation. But yeah,
Yeah.
the Geico thing, yeah, that was they were good. You know, they didn't pay well, but they paid me very well in getting me into the courtroom and getting that experience. You know, I think within 4 or 5 weeks of taking that job right out of school, they had me in the courtroom, which is what I wanted. So.
No, that's awesome. Well, the fact is that you were able to get like all those knocks, but I can't even imagine like trying to remember names and like I can't even imagine being in your place and not. I have a good memory and I feel like I could do well at that. But other people I know, like for example, my wife, she has like compared to me, not a good memory. And I can't even imagine her like you have to have like an inter. Obviously, you have files and you have your accordion thing that you bring in, but like. You have to have a good memory, right? If
Yeah.
you're holding that many cases, that's
You
crazy.
do. Yeah, you do. And you know, it obviously with that many, you know, kind of the more mundane ones kind of get lost in the shuffle. You kind of, you know, you tend to remember the more exciting ones or, you know, the more colorful
Or the
characters.
unique name, last names, right? Because how many
Correct.
times have you mixed up a Smith in that
Oh.
120 cases?
Too many times, way too many times. And yeah, it's tough. I feel bad whenever that happens. But yeah, you know, it does. It happens more than I would like to admit. But yeah, the memory thing, you know, names are always tough, you know, to keep straight, especially in the courtroom. I've had situations where I've been in you know, the courthouse with two or three cases on the docket for a trial in a day. So that can be a little bit of a challenge not to mix up, you know. Fortunately, I got through those without botching names, but that's kind of like one of my greatest fears is, you know, getting up there and presenting the evidence to, you know, the judge or the jury and just completely fumbling the client's name and they're looking at me like, I can't believe I hired this guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, the other thing, just with you bringing that up, is that that brings me to, I don't think I've ever had this moment, but it's like that cliche, you know, dream. You're at the chalkboard and you're in your underwear. Like, you must have been like a very gregarious, like good with public speaking in high school and growing up, right?
I actually hated it.
You hated it.
Oh yeah.
Interesting. So
Yep.
was that like, I mean, that's obviously something that you've probably been, or do you still, does it give you like anxiety? Like, do you get the Sunday scaries before like a new trial?
A big one, I do. You know, if it's something where you know, it's a little more than the run of the mill, I still get a little bit of the jitters. And like I played sports growing up too. I played baseball for, you know, years and years and years. I got like that before games too, but I felt like if you could kind of channel that in a certain way, you can I use that to kind of motivate myself and to force me to prepare and sometimes over prepare for that stuff. 'Cause I feel like that's the one thing that'll take away those Sunday scaries or, you know, the jitters is just knowing that you're prepped and ready to go. So yeah, I do get that. And the public speaking thing, I have had to learn to embrace it 'cause I have to do it. Yeah, but growing up, like in school, I hated it. You know, avoided it like the plague in undergrad. And you know, any chance I could get to not have to, you know, do anything, you know, public speaking wise or doing oral argument in law school, I tried to get out of that too. I enjoy, like in a perfect world, I would much rather write and make argument through writing than having to get up and do it orally. But that's what I do.
That's awesome. And
Yeah.
I would imagine you sort of broke that at doing the Geico. If you were there in one day doing multiple different cases, you kind of had to have, man, I can't even imagine that. Like, it still baffles me when you say that, just because you have maybe like six or something cases, let's say, in a day, and you have to have those organized.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah,
crazy.
you got to. Yeah, and if you don't, you know, you're kind of dead on arrival. You're going to look unprepared, you know, that's something as a lawyer you never want to be called that. You know, just unprepared. That's unacceptable. So.
This, I guess, leans to all of your career you've done with Geico and Geico type companies. What are, I don't know how to phrase this properly, but like some people, you know, like will take advantage of the system and like they'll keep on coming back and suing and stuff like that. Companies like Geico once in a while will take a larger stand on a case. What do you usually see with like that?
Well, yeah, so like you know, I agree. You know, that's a problem that we fight all the time is just people taking advantage of the system. And at Geico, they had a pretty good strategy in place when I was there. And again, it's been, God, what, 7, 8 years since I worked there, but it hasn't changed much in that time. They would tend to draw the line on, you know, it mostly car accident cases is what we were dealing with. Geico doesn't write a whole lot of other policies like you know, renters or homeowners, stuff like that. But you know, it's mostly auto. When there's not a whole lot of damage visibly to a vehicle after a car accident, that seems to be where Geico draws the line. It's like if you've got a $2 dent on the back of your bumper, or you, I saw it a lot too. You have the two little indentations of the license plate screws.
Yeah, I've been in that one.
And you know, and you've got that situation, and you got a person claiming, you know, 6 months of, you know, physical therapy for this, that, and the other. Geico's like, hey, we're not buying it. We'll give you five, you know, we'll offer you $500 if you want to make that work, great. If not, we're going to send Zach down to the courthouse to defend it. And, you know, more times than not just saying me, but I mean that group that worked for that office, you know, we did pretty well in those cases. Those are usually dismissed outright, or the numbers awarded were very small.
No, that's great. And obviously they how often in those cases do they come with their own lawyer?
Anecdotally, probably upwards of 90% were represented.
Okay. That makes sense.
The pro se folks, the ones that didn't have an attorney, were always very entertaining, because they, you know, they get into the courtroom and they're trying to like play lawyer and client at the same time, and just to watch people struggle with that was amusing.
Yeah. No, I can even imagine. It's funny that they would let it get to that. I would imagine the people who would let it get to there, either they would go way over the top with a lawyer or not have a lawyer at all. And obviously that would be the funny one. It would be like trying to, like buy something at a bazaar in like Madagascar when you don't even know the language.
Correct. Yeah, and with the saying goes, anyone who represents themselves has a fool for a client. That's what, you know, they would say in law school, and just seeing that play out in practice, it's so true. Get a lawyer. I mean, yeah, you're not gonna, you know, treat yourself medically. You go to a doctor, and the same thing in a case like this. If you got something complex, get a lawyer.
It's funny, I heard the same thing, but to doctors, it was like, I think it was not cardiologist, but I don't know what, it's slipping my mind, but basically they did a study that doctors take less treatment than they give to their patients for the same exact stuff. And it's similar to that, I would say, with lawyers probably, because you don't want to. You have so much emotions in your case, you kind of want to step away from that and not kind of add that. Because I would imagine emotion is like one of the worst things, at least with a judge. Maybe with a jury, it's completely different.
That's true. That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, to some degree, you know, it's fine in front of a jury. You know, if it's been a if it's a traumatic case and an injury, yeah, sure, you want them to show that. But yeah, I mean, to your point though, like I deal with conflict, you know, Monday through Friday. The last thing I want to do is, you know, engage in more conflict in my own, you know, personal time. And you know, I'm like one of the least litigious people in my personal life, you know, but that's what I do Monday through Friday. So I get my fill, and then, you know, just kind of leave it there.
Speaking on that note, and this might not apply to you, have you ever been involved in a personal suit where you had yourself represented by someone,
No,
some other lawyer? Oh.
thank goodness. No. I was in, so it's funny. I was in a car accident when I was working for Geico. I was rear-ended, and I had
Were
the
you represented by Geico?
no. So it didn't even get it, so I didn't make a claim. I didn't do anything, but like I had the guy tap me from behind at a stoplight, and had those two, you know, little screw holes in the back of the bumper, and his insurance company was USAA, and they called and wanted to, you know, get my version of what happened. And I told them, you know, I said, look, I wasn't injured. No one could have been injured. Like I kind of just like really like hammered that home. But I did nothing with it. The guy felt bad. You know, obviously, you know, I wasn't hurt and I moved on. But it's one of those examples, you know, somebody who's looking to make a quick buck would, of course, you know, try to do something with that.
Yeah, no, that's. And the other question I had is, were you actually insured by Geico too?
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely. Yeah,
I
still
would
am.
think, okay. I would just think that would be extremely funny if you were representing Geico and you didn't actually have their car insurance. So if you could explain to me kind of like your Mona Lisa case that you've won, what is the one that makes you feel good? And then like we were saying, the Sunday scaries, or like the Monday scaries.
That's
But
right.
what makes you, I don't know, when you're in those bad spots, like make you feel good that you had already succeeded with?
Yeah. So I remember one This would have been probably 2014, 2015, again at Geico. And the posture of that case was a little strange because there we had, like I said, we had a good group of attorneys. There were like 10 of us in that office, but we were prone to lose attorneys, maybe one every couple months. They just didn't pay well. People were constantly leaving. So I had a colleague who had tried or defended a case brought by husband and wife against a Geico insured in the lower level trial court in Virginia. It's called General District Court. That's where a lot of stuff is resolved. But so the plaintiffs had filed suit. They had gone to General District Court. They had won pretty good verdicts in General District Court. But it was one of those situations where there wasn't a whole lot of damage to the vehicle. We had photographs that clearly showed this was a nothing accident. But for some reason, the judge who made that verdict at the lower level had not been persuaded by that, and gave this husband and wife a ton of money. So the lawyer who defended it left about two. We Geico had appealed. The lawyer left about 2 weeks before the jury trial. That would be the second crack at it. The appeal trial would go to a jury and not a judge. So 2 weeks before, my boss comes to me and say, "Hey, do you mind getting involved in this? I know it's last minute, but here's what's going on." I said, "Sure, let me look at it, but yeah, I'm ready to go." So 2 weeks later, we try the case. I put it on, and like I remember that it was, I kind of went into court with very little notes. I felt like I kind of had it, not necessarily in the bag. You never think that, but it's one thing I felt like, just don't over prepare for this. Just go in and kind of be organic with it. And we ended up winning that outright. The jury, I think, deliberated after closing arguments from both attorneys, maybe like 10 to 15 minutes, and then came back with zero for both of these folks. And as tough as it is to kind of skunk somebody like that, though, I felt like they were trying to just get away with something, and it did feel good, to kind of reverse an obviously poor decision by a lower level court, and get to something that felt fair for my client, who felt like it's just a simple mistake, just kind of rolled into the back of somebody at a traffic light, and we don't want to shower these people with money. I've said that before, but anyway, that's one that comes to mind. And I hate picking on these folks, but the husband was so shaken up by the verdict that before the foreperson could like finish getting all of the verbiage out, he like ran out of the courtroom sobbing. And I just remember that sticks with me, 8 years later. So
Well, it's funny. It's probably he probably put a down payment on a car, and then I'd already bought a boat.
that's what I'm thinking too. And those the lower level verdicts were not small. I think like I can't, I mean, obviously it's been a very long time. I think he like was awarded over 20,000 at the lower level. I can't remember what his wife got, but she had the better claim. I remember that. Her case, other than the lack of damage to the vehicle, she made a decent witness on the stand. He was horrible. I remember that guy. He was a two-time convicted felon. Like he told the hospital that he, we went to the emergency room after the accident. I think he told the nurse that he had been in like 27 prior accidents. So like that was a fun cross-examination because I obviously asked him about that. I said, "Well, you've been in 27 prior accidents. That's a lot." And he's like, "Well, no, I exaggerated that." And I said, "Okay, that's fine. What else are you exaggerating?" And he just, spun himself in circles after that. So
Yeah, if somebody had told me they had been at 27, actually, I would think they were the worst person trying to drug seek painkillers and stuff like
yes.
that. I'd be like, I would never say 27. I would have been like, oh, this is my first accident.
Correct.
So I'd like to bring in this just when it applies to the guest, but AI. So you've probably seen what people can do with photos nowadays. How has that impacted at all any of your cases where you've had to either A, get an expert to kind of verify images of like car accidents? Obviously there's Photoshop before, but nowadays it's getting better and better and better. A, have you seen that? And B, if you have, like how do you combat that in the future?
Yeah, that is something I have not seen, and I'm just trying to think of what you would need to do. I think your point about getting an expert, yeah, I guess you'd have to have, send the image file to an expert, and then, probably it's something that you would need to take up with the court before you even get to a trial. That would, probably be a subject of, like a motion before trial, where, you'd obviously bring your expert to testify about this. And, I don't, I'm curious now, after this is done, I'm gonna look that up. But no, I mean, personally, no. I have not seen that, thank goodness. I think that would be it would be truly a unique issue.
I was just thinking that, like, I've always thought I'm a computer electrical engineer, and I'm like, an image is literally just, so obviously cameras have been around since, since fire, or basically down the line from fire, and it's literally just little dots of color, and we can make little dots of color, we can change, filter stuff. So what stop us from making our own and you see that if you look at, like, I mean, anything nowadays, and stuff is popping up with audio generation. I think somebody told me, one of a previous guest was telling me that they were doing election calls with Joe Biden, like fake Joe Biden voice in like the Northeast, telling people that the election, like the election, not election day, voter day had been switched to a different day. And I was like,
Oh, wow. So
that's,
intentionally throwing people off.
yeah.
Oh, God.
And
That's sad. Yeah,
yeah,
no.
it, and the thing is, like, obviously that wouldn't, this sounds a little ageist, but that wouldn't throw people in your generation or my generation. However, like,
Yeah.
for example, my dad came to me 2 weeks ago, because they live in my house during the week, and he said, like, when they watch 60 Minutes, there's always that new, like, the new craze, new person, new threat, and it was supposedly like, there's a scam going on right now that has people scamming people with their parents or their sons or their grandma's voice asking for money.
Oh
Like,
my
like,
gosh. Yeah.
it's not the ex-deposed son of Nepal. It's your grandfather calling. And I just thought it was so funny. My dad was like serious when he came to me. He was like, "We need to have a code word." And I'm like, first of all, when you ask me for money, I'll know that's the code word, because you would never ask me for money in my life.
Yeah.
So
Oh, that's good. No, I think with this with AI that I don't know if you caught it. I kind of paid some attention to it. There were some news stories with ChatGPT, and when that was first kind of being rolled out, they had used it, I think, to like articulate some sort of argument that got somebody out of a traffic ticket. So then there was all sorts of buzz, in the legal community about, oh, is, people going to start resorting to AI to, argue these cases, in the courtroom. And, as fun as that is to kind of think about, I think, well, I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell. But I think the industry that I'm in will always need a live body in the courtroom. But again, like I said, time will tell. Who knows where we're going to be in 100 years.
yeah, because let's put it this way. I think I've brought this on to add to one of my topics before, but recently, you know that, like, they've got computers going against like grandmasters and stuff in chess. And more recently, they've had like pairs. Like, they'll have a computer model and a person play the match, and that will beat an independent person, and it'll beat an independent computer because of the in model. And that's what I see. I mean, I don't see why a lawyer couldn't do that as well. You know what I mean? Like, this goes back to memory too. Like, and I'm just pulling this obviously from suits and all that stuff. When they bring up prior instances of cases and stuff like that, you've got to, I mean, you probably know like 20 to 30 cases in your head that you can pull from for similar instances of, like, when you're going in. You know what cases to pull from for precedents. And but, like, something comes out of nowhere and you don't have, I don't know, maybe you do, but that way you have it right there.
Yeah, it's your safety net. Yeah, and no, seriously, that kind of sounds like a dream come true, to be honest with you, because I've been in that situation where, I've been in the middle of a trial, and an issue comes up, somebody raises an objection, and then obviously we're off on a tangent arguing this, obscure point of law, obviously, that I'm not prepared for. I've been where we've had to take recesses, and you run down to the law library at the courthouse to research an issue. You come back in 30 minutes and argue it to a judge. It would be nice to just, plug that in, to the AI assistant, and let it spit out, and you can kind of do it on the fly. Yeah, and I see it too. There, a colleague at the firm and I were talking about using it to summarize like voluminous medical records, because we see a lot of that. We get tons and tons of medical documentation that we've got to go through, absorb, and digest. It would be nice to just kind of run that through, a program and have it spit something out that's distilled enough for us to, pick it up and, snap your fingers and go.
No, definitely. Because in the end, people think that, like, I mean, all these platforms of AI are like whimsical and doing grand stuff, but they're really just condensing, like, if obviously condensing documents down, they're taking $5 words, which actually mean three things, and breaking it down to a sentence for you. Like, I used it for a couple of research papers that I needed to understand some topics, and it's really, like, when you read the research top the research paper, they're using words that, like, if it's it's exactly what you're saying, putting it in layman's terms that a non-technical user would understand. And if you're asking it to do Python script, or you're asking it to do something like that, it's just pulling all this average information from the internet. It's not thinking of new ideas. They're just more generic and ideas that'll work for the masses.
Correct. Yeah, that's
Unless you're
absolutely.
working with an AI that's specific to, like, where are we going to be 5 years from now?
Right. And I think that's what, this program that we were looking at is like they've developed it and tailored it for, the type of work that we do. So I, who knows what the cost is. I'm sure that's pretty hefty, but it's nice to think about, because there are only so many hours in a day, and you want to, trim the fat where you can.
So just thinking about this, I saw one small video, and it was like every time you ask ChatGPT something, it costs a bottle of water. Like, they said that's how it takes a bottle of water to cool the, like, equivalency of the servers that it runs
Yeah.
to take it to do that. And I was like, I don't know if that really translates to me. Obviously, I'm a computer engineer, but a bottle of water, that's just,
It doesn't translate to me, I can tell you
yeah.
that.
But I don't know. I think that's crazy. So, looking down the line, where do you see yourself in, like, let's say 10 years? Is there any expanding? Is there anything specific, new, or anything like that you see your career?
That's really a good question. Part of me is always concerned about autonomous vehicles really gutting this profession. Like, as much as we, don't want to root for these things to happen, it is what sustains a business like the firm that I work for, is, these, sorts of things happening and people needing our help,
Can I
kind of.
ask you what you drive?
So I drive a, I've got a Nissan, like a Nissan Frontier pickup truck, and I've got a, little Lexus hatchback. But I mean, both, I'm driving that thing. I'm not, not in a Tesla or anything like that. But, there's always that kind of underlying fear that in 10 years, where are we going to be? Are we going to have these vehicles that have so many safety features on them? The promise is always that, we're going to take away the risk of these things. So, in 10 years, I would like to, still be doing this work, because I do enjoy helping people. There, it is very rewarding to kind of get involved in these things and to really help people, where, they come to us and they're like, I've been in this incident. It was not my fault. I've got, you know, all these bills coming in. I can't work. I need your help. And to help them navigate that process, whether it's a 3-month deal or you're dealing with somebody for 3 years, I've had that too, or the cases just take forever to resolve. Getting them to the resolution is great. And I would like to stay in some type of work where I can truly help somebody like that. So whether that's, you know, with the firm I'm at now, or, you know, eventually, you know, doing my own thing and going out in another firm, I'd like to stay within this area of the law. It's, you know, really what my experience has been so far. You know, I do enjoy going to court. I'm competitive by nature, so I do like, you know, getting into the courtroom and, you know, in competing, so to speak, you know, trying to get a certain result for people. But yeah, I don't know, 10 years, you know, hopefully still doing this and not, you know, on the sidewalk because Tesla has run us out of business.
This is probably a garbage question, but have you dealt with anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No. So it would be, yeah, but I mean, I've, you know, gone to continuing educations where they, you know, that's been the topic, and, you know, they do a good job of kind of allaying any fear of that, because, you know, there obviously be a roll up to that, you know, when this stuff becomes more affordable, you know, not everybody's going to jump at the opportunity to have something like this. So there'll be a period of time where, you know, the technology is just not, you know, widely available. But yeah, it'd be more like a product liability, you know, type situation where, you know, if in the event an accident does occur, you know, to what extent is the, you know, the product
manufacturer liable, or
correct.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that, 'cause I've never really thought of it in that angle. 'Cause obviously, you know, it's got cameras, it's got sensors all over it. To what extent is like, is there a requirement to, 'cause the other thing is something wild I heard that I'd like to mention is, you've heard the thing that they're, obviously this would never happen in America, but in theory it would be nice, but a breathalyzer on cars. And obviously not everyone wants to like breathe every time they have to drive a car, but from an engineering point of view, from my side, I was like, oh, that would be, I mean, yeah, like that would probably save like 10 lives, but also there's, you know, like the people who are like, I want my freedom. I don't want to have to.
I want to drink and drive, right?
Yeah. Stuff ridiculous. Like, yeah. I've seen a video that it was like dated to like 1960 or 65 or 70. And it was just talking about that. Like, it was either that, I think I saw both videos, but it was seatbelts too. And people were just like, I ain't wearing them.
Yeah. It's crazy. No, you think it's a good idea. I mean, and you see it, you know, people get in trouble for a DUI and they, you know, court orders them to put it on there. But I, you know, I've never thought about it like that either. I mean, shoot, if they, you know, kind of made that a standard feature, we'd probably see a huge decrease in those types of things.
Yeah. But I just think it's, well, obviously it sounds like the law has to quickly adapt. And it's probably been like that for, like, of all time, like
the law. Yeah. You take classes on it in law school, you know, but yeah, it does. It evolves over time. You know, it's not a static thing. The law is not static at all. It's constantly changing.
Because, for example, have you, and this should have took place in your day and era, but, and then I guess it doesn't record, but backup cameras, for example, those mm-hmm. just started because I think they're a requirement now in all car makers. They have to have a backup camera. Has that ever been, they don't record, but has that ever been?
I think it has. Yeah. I'm trying to remember there. Yeah. I seem to remember that somebody in a case that went to a trial was relying, not a recording, you know, obviously we weren't using the video as evidence, but I remember, you know, somebody was going down the line of, well, I was, you know, backing up using the camera and I, you know, didn't see anything and then bam, I get hit. You know, it didn't really move the needle at all for that person, you know, whatever they were trying to achieve in that case. I can't remember, you know, if I was defending that or, you know, representing the plaintiff. But yeah, I do remember vaguely that coming up, but it did not amount to anything.
Yeah. But that's the awesome thing with technology, though. Like, I'm a big person with Reddit because I love to hear, you know, those crazy, mm-hmm. you've got like the normal people and then you got the crazies, which is mm-hmm. also the fun part. Yeah. And those crazies, they have like cameras on the front. They've got crazy. They either are crazy or they got a good shot of a couple crazies.
Yes.
That's the best part. Like,
yes.
That's probably like slam dunk cases. Well, they might not even be cases for you. They're like one of those, you know, suits type cases where they never go to court. You just
Correct.
settle outside of court, you circle them on the video,
Oh,
and
yeah.
then you say on the bottom, this is where you make the checkout to.
Correct. Yeah. You make it
Because
payable here. Yeah. No, those, yeah, those, the, yeah, those are few and far between. But yeah, you're right. You know, when we get these videos, you know, it is gold most of the time, but you know, we've had a fair amount too where we get a video and it's just like it becomes very clear in an instant, like our case, any argument we had just poof, you know, up in smoke. I had one like that, you know, about a year ago. It represented a school bus driver. And you know, those vehicles have cameras all over them now, and those videos are readily accessible with a Freedom of Information Act request. And you know, she told us a version of the accident. You know, I got the video and pretty quickly saw that it was much different. And you know, had to have a conversation with her, but you know, quietly got out of that case. There was really nothing, you know, more to do.
No, though it's crazy how it's just like you have to update with the technology, and even to the respect of, I guess, do you have to deal with kind of, I don't know how to phrase this, but like woke culture? Like, is that ever?
I had that come up recently. I think I ended up settling this lady's case, but it was a lot of language in her medical records that she felt she was, you know, being made to wait at the emergency room much longer than she should have, you know, because of her race. And you know, I always kind of I see that and I get concerned taking something like that to trial, just in how that's going to be perceived, whether it's correct or not, you know, it's true or not. You always have to look at it through the lens of what's the audience. And you know, in that case, if we had not settled, it would have gone to trial in front of a judge. And I think most judges around here would
They don't
probably
stick their neck out, basically.
no.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that, 'cause obviously you don't want to it's you look at it from both sides, your client and obviously you, about how much time you want to spend, and obviously you don't want to put her through this if she's not going to get anything out of it. It's like
Yeah.
those are probably the worst situations ever. You go through the trial and nothing comes out of it at all.
I had that this morning. I had a lady come in where her trial is coming up in 2 weeks, and brought her in for trial prep this morning. And you know, kind of had to have a heart to heart with her and told her, look, I mean, I believe in you. Like, you know, I've got your back. I'm your advocate. When we go into the courtroom, we're going to put our best foot forward. But I said, if anybody in that courtroom is applying the law the way they should, we are going to lose. And you know, my firm has put a lot of work into your case. You know, obviously we're invested in it too. We don't want to walk away with it with any, you know, with nothing. So I'm trying to get it settled, and I think I will, but it was a hard realization for her. You know, that appointment was, you know, probably close to 2 hours, and a lot of it was just her kind of coming to grips with the fact that, you know, even though she was hurt and, you know, it's a questionable case, she's very entrenched in her belief that, you know, she didn't do anything wrong. And you know, I believe her, but I just think there's a good argument based on the evidence that, you know, the other side could be successful in, you know, getting this thing kicked. And I told her, I said, I've been on the other side of these cases. I know the arguments, I know the pressure points, and I know what they're going to do. And it's a coin flip, and it's tough. You know, these cases are personal to them, and you know, I understand that. But yeah, you don't want to go and not get any recovery from their perspective, nor ours.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that's like of your job. Obviously, there's talking to the judge and talking to the jury, but probably the hardest talk you have to do is like having a real talk with your client where they're like if I was on the other side, I'd eat you alive if you're talking like this and your story's not completely straight. And two drinks turns to six drinks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's a lot of this, you know, is obviously legal work in the courtroom, but just as much of it is, you know, just talking to people and, you know, being, you know, kind of getting on their level, making it make sense to them. You know, I try, as kind of a younger lawyer in my education in law school, they're trying to get newer lawyers to kind of get away from legalese and, you know, these big words and concepts, and just try to communicate more effectively, you know, with your average, you know, person, so they can kind of understand how this works. So that's, you know, a lot of this job is that, it's just kind of getting on their level and making it make sense to them.
No, I totally get that. Okay, we've got into the last question. What is something that your parents did that you would like to pass on to a next generation? And what is something new or different that you would do?
So I think so much of my parents. I think, you know, I look back on my childhood and there's not really one thing that I could ever truly pick and say that's the one thing that I would pass along. But, you know, if I had to, I think my parents did a really, really good job of working together as a team. And they just complemented them each other in the perfect way. You know, my mom for a lot of my childhood was stay at home with my brother and I. So it was always great to have her around, you know, for that. My dad, you know, was the breadwinner and worked a pretty heavy job and, you know, would work late hours. But the thing that my dad, I feel like always, you know, was good at was, you know, I played baseball and, you know, had game, I was playing, you know, at the height of it, playing for three different teams, you know, at one time. He rarely, if ever, missed one of my games. And to this day, it still means a lot to me that he would take the time to do that and to come and show up and be supportive. So, you know, the team aspect, you know, I would definitely want to do that for my children, you know, with my wife. I hope that we are as good of a team as my parents were. And I hope, you know, our kids say that about us when they're my age. But something different. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I struggle with that one too. You know, they were really good about letting me just be a kid. You know, I wasn't one that, you know, my parents were forcing me to like go and work a steady job at a young age or anything like that. You know, they kind of allowed me to, you know, play sports and be a kid. You know, I don't know with mine, I don't know. We'll just have to kind of see how that goes. But, you know, it may be one thing where, you know, kind of getting them out and working at a younger age, maybe. But again, you know, I'm kind of grasping at straws. I just think
No, I like that. That's actually new. I don't think anyone's ever said that. And I think so when I was growing up, I actually volunteered to do it. Because I don't know. I actually don't know why I did it. I worked at Safeway as a bag boy.
Yeah.
And then worked my way up. And then I worked at Blockbuster, which was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If they ever bring that back. Oh.
Rest in peace. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
But before we close up, what is your team, by the way? I would imagine.
Boston Red Sox.
Red Sox. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm obviously Nationals just because the area. Well, yeah. Technically it was Orioles and then Nationals. And then
I tell you, the Orioles have been a really good watch the last few years, and Nationals too. They kind of dropped off, but yeah, this Orioles team, I think they're going to run that division this year. They're loaded.
It's always a money thing. I mean, it's just like ebbs and flows. Like you have a great team unless you've got a good money guy. I'm not even into baseball, but I mean, it makes complete sense. If you don't have a good person in managing the money and treating your players and like building up, because I was the same as you. Like I had two baseball teams, you had three. You obviously had like a club, you had a fun team, and then school. Yep. And then you had your Bubblicious, your seeds.
Your big league chew, right?
And then you had your big bag to take everywhere, and that prize aluminum bat that you begged your parents for.
Yes. Yes.
Let me guess. It was an Easton. No.
Yep. Easton. Absolutely.
But no, I just was curious about that. Cause I don't really talk to much baseball people. And to be fair, I love to play baseball. I hate to watch it.
Watching's tough. You know, I love it. I love the game, but I agree. There's some games, even watching the Red Sox, like, you know, it can be tough.
I do like that new rule. I haven't watched it, but the time, and
Yep.
I think that's at least a good step in the right direction. But
Yeah.
yeah. But thank you very much for doing this, Zach. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Michael, this has been great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And I hope you have a good night, sir.
Yeah, same to you. Take care.
See ya.
If you like this week's episode of People More Interesting Than Me, please follow me on Apple Podcasts so you won't miss out on more episodes like these.